This is The Agriculturist, the official podcast of the student-created magazine in the Texas Tech University Department of Agricultural Education and Communications. In each episode, we hear from the students as they expand on the stories you'll see in the printed and online magazine from the school we love so dearly.
Thank you for joining us. My name's Lauren.
My name is Brooklyn.
And we are both agricultural communications majors here at Texas Tech, and today we are going to be discussing the fine lines of controversy in our agriculture industry surrounding alternative energy.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about our background. I am from Wilson, Texas, and I grew up on a farm. I am a farmer's daughter. We raise cattle, cotton, alfalfa, and different types of hay. Been in 4-H and FFA, grew up farming, running a tractor, and all kinds of stuff in the ag industry. So that's basically what grew me.
So a little bit about me. I come from a very different background than Brooke. I was raised in a big city, or somewhat big city. I am from Waco, Texas, so a very dense populated area that doesn't have a lot of agriculture land or agriculture industry surrounding it. I grew up in a city around a lot of people that didn't know a lot about what our agriculture industry did for us, and that's kind of the knowledge I had until I got into high school, where I started to learn a little bit more about agriculture. When I originally went to college, I was not an ag major. I was a pre-med major, so I didn't really make that transition until sophomore year, and that's where my knowledge about the industry really started to grow. So I definitely have a bit of different background information and a bit of a different perspective on the topic.
So a little bit about our story in the Agriculturalist magazine is it's a story about alternative energy in ag. And so we discuss the different alternative energies that are being used in the state or even the U.S. when it comes down to wind, solar, oil, geothermal, biomass, and hydroelectric. There's many different topics that you can go into when talking about alternative energy. And we interviewed several different people all across the industry in Texas and that have different roles, whether it's policymakers or an industry leader. And so we were going to talk about the fine lines when it comes down to those controversial topics in the alternative energy sources.
All right, so our first topic that we find important that we had brought up in an interview the other day was about the oil and gas tax to fund education. So essentially, there's a tax with oil and gas that comes through legislation in the U.S. where it funds an educational program on teaching students about our fossil fuel use in the United States and a little bit of all over the world. I know for me, coming from a background where I wasn't around agriculture, it was kind of a waste of money. I didn't see the desire to focus on fossil fuel education when we should be educating on other things. And so it was something that was never really important when I was growing up and something we never really desired in our school system or in our educational system.
Yeah, I think my opinion's a little bit different. Being from that small town in an agriculture community, I think it was like a big thing for us to be a part of and want to learn about, just because we wanted to know where our land came from and what built our communities. And so I guess my opinion is a little bit different than yours, because I think that education was important for a small community like mine in educating our kids about where our, like, about the fossil fuels, where our community came from, and what we're doing with all of our land around us. So I thought it was something important to us.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something that does bring up a lot of questions depending on where you're from. It has a big geographical impact on how important that topic really is to some different people. I know there's a lot of people that, especially out in West Texas area, find importance in that educational system. And for me, it was just never something important, but it was never something that really surrounded me either.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I think that's the biggest thing is it's where you're from and what was important from where you're from.
I think going on with another geographical topic is going to be the wildlife conservation and environmental impact. That one has been a big one in our interviews, and one we've really heard a lot about is how these alternative energy sources are being implemented and what they're doing to the world around us. I know growing up, I never really saw an impact. I never thought they really did anything. I had no idea what the effects of land and the effects on ecosystems and things around them really was, and that they really even had a major impact. For me, it was just energy, and it was the idea of having an energy source that would last.
Yeah, especially like around here, we know that wind's becoming a huge thing and solar's now the next new thing on this farmland. I think being a farmer's daughter and growing up around that, I got to see those environmental impacts, especially due to our cattle and our land that we had owned and previously grazed and stuff. So once those solar panels or wind turbines are put on our land, that grass doesn't come back the same. The soil's not the same. And it's really hard to graze cattle if you ever want to do that again after those renewable energy sources are put on those fields. And so I think that impact between our raising our cattle for beef and grazing that land is really kind of changed after those renewable sources are put on our land. So I feel like it kind of affected our environment around here, especially in West Texas.
Yeah, I can see that. I think not seeing them at all, not really knowing what they do. Like I said, I had never seen one prior coming to moving out to West Texas. I really had never even seen a wind turbine in person. I'd seen a couple solar panels, but I guess it never really occurred to me kind of the environmental impact that they do have. I know the impact on ecosystems has been a huge topic, especially when researching the story and what people kind of think these alternative energy sources really do to our ecosystems in the land around it. I guess I never really addressed that topic in my head of they are harming all of our ecosystems. They're harming our land. You know, is it one of those things for you, Brooke, that when people do implement these, like, you see a huge impact, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I think it makes a very big impact. And, like, I think everyone doesn't really realize the impact they make on it until you really break down, like, what it's doing to the ecosystem and to the environment that it's in. And no one really understands that until you're kind of a part of it and you get to watch it happen, whether it's the grass in the soil or whether it's actual birds and animals that's being affected by this. I think it kind of really changes everything, like photosynthesis when it comes to your grass. The solar panels are kind of covering up the grass and it's not getting that nutrients that it used to. And so I feel like the impact isn't really getting noticed until you truly start studying it. And I think that's a big thing that we've learned in this story is you don't know everything until you start really looking into the research behind it.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's a good point when researching the story, you know, coming from that background where I wasn't raised around it. I've definitely learned a lot. I've definitely had to put my learning cap on and figure out a lot of things, but it definitely has been very interesting to see what kind of goes on in the background, what's behind the scenes of this whole topic, really.
Yes, I completely agree. It really changes your mind about things just to kind of focus and research on the new and upcoming technologies and how it affects our environment and our communities.
So on the topic of the conservation and kind of the lasting of these things, I think our next question we really ask is our reliability of these wind turbines and these solar panels. You know, wind doesn't blow every day, and what do you do when there's overcast skies? How do these things last, and are they going to last?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really big topic that really I think everyone has to think about. And I know coming from my background, farmers and ranchers kind of have a huge problem with just like, oh, my land's being taken over by wind turbines and solar panels. Like, I don't want to look at that every day. My land needs to be used for what it was supposed to be used for, raising cattle, growing crops and stuff like that. And so I think the reliability of it becomes down to, like, really thinking about where is our future headed with this green energy or renewable energy topic? Like, where is the next step and how are we going to make our economy better and provide this energy for these cities and stuff like that when you're trying to raise a farm too and raise beef?
Yeah, I think I always saw it as this whole idea that we've got to have energy from somewhere. You know, oil and gas, we've always been told in the city that it's not going to be there 100 years from now. What are you going to do when you don't have those non-renewable resources? And so for us, it was always that, like, these were the reliable options. I mean, what happens to wind turbines? What happens to solar panels? Like, they're supposed to be the end-all be-all, a green option, something that's saving the world, something that's going to be here. And something that definitely would outlast non-renewable energy. And so I guess we've always seen it as, like, this was the reliable option.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I think where I kind of stand on the deal is, like, obviously everyone is using them now and maybe it's the thing to use, but I think there's better options out there. And I think there's more resources and different renewable energy, like different wind turbine types that you can use. Like, are these the things that are going to be the most successful? Who knows? And I don't know exactly where the future is going to go, but I think there's better options. And, like, you drive down in Snyder, Texas, like south of West Texas area, and you see some of the wind turbines are running and some of them aren't. So you're sitting there questioning, okay, are we actually getting energy from these things? Or, like, is it just because of the weather? And so, like, I really don't know exactly where the reliability is going, and I think there's better options out there. But at the time, like, this is what it is, and we're going to have to try to figure that out, whether it's through the economy or through more research.
I mean, yeah, I think reliability poses a big question on really both sides of the argument because, you know, the next thing you have to ask yourself, well, if you're questioning reliability of wind and solar, what is the reliability of oil and gas? I mean, a lot of us, especially here in Texas, remember 2021 when the polar vortex hit, and as crazy as it sounds, that's a weather condition that maybe we should have been expecting. And I know when it hit, it posed the question of what are we going to do about oil and gas, because our oil and gas did freeze. So I think you question, you know, well, if solar and wind aren't reliable and neither are oil and gas, what's your next option?
Yeah, completely. I remembered vividly when that polar vortex hit, and it was a big uproar in the area and really just the state. Like, it affected everyone. And I think that's where everyone was kind of like, why didn't we plan for this? And I know in some of our interviews we discussed that and how we have planned for the worst. We need to plan for the worst and what's going to happen so we can hopefully fix those economy detriments and those breakdowns and the stuff like that that happens in our economy. I know when we talked in some of our interviews about when that polar vortex hit, that dairy farm up in Littlefield had that huge effect, and their whole entire system had to shut down. And like, it's pretty hard when you have that many cattle on hand and you have to shut everything down because of this weather. And so I think like a planning for the worst and like trying to see where the reliability of that oil and gas goes is a huge thing, especially you can't predict the weather, especially not in Texas. So
And I think a lot of what came up, especially in our interviews, is this whole all of the above approach thing to needing it all. I mean, there's obviously going to be controversy on both sides, but you know, if we're questioning reliability of wind and solar and we're also questioning reliability of oil and gas, at what point do you sit down and say maybe we need it all?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a big thing, is this all of the above approach. And we all want the best for our economy and our world and our nation and all that, but what's it going to be? Are we going to pick all of it, or are we going to try to focus on certain things?
Yeah, so I know you also mentioned a little bit ago kind of talking some about the loss of land aspect of it and losing land to all of these. And, you know, where I come from, I guess we kind of have this idea that the land you're losing is land that's not being used anyways. You know, if there's not cattle on it, then what difference does it make if we put wind turbines and solar panels on it? Or if there's not crops on it, you know, what difference does it make what we use it for if it's not being used for anything? And I guess that's kind of the idea we've always had, especially being in a city where I'm not around the land itself. I'm really not, growing up, wasn't educated at all on what the land was being used for. And I think that was just the common understanding and the common idea, was that we were putting wind turbines and solar panels on land that wasn't being used for anything to begin with.
Yeah, no, I understand. I completely see that. But like, coming from where I was from and the farmland and growing up and what we did, like, the world is constantly growing and we're constantly having to feed people. So these farmers and ranchers are having to use that land for whether it's crops, raising cattle, or just producing different crops that can feed this nation, especially since it's growing so fast. And I think the wind turbines and solar panels have really kind of affect that, because like I mentioned earlier, like when you're putting those solar panels on the land, it's covering up the grass and it's like changing the soil and changing the crops where you can't really use it anymore. You can't ever go back and graze that because it's never going to be the same. And so there again, we're shutting down the grass and we're shutting down the production of cattle and beef for our nation. Kind of the same thing with wind turbines. You can't really graze completely around them. They may be in your land and there's certain areas you can graze, but you can't graze up next to it. And it kind of affects the soil still and affects your crops coming back, or whether you're going to ever use that again to produce food for the nation. And so I think that's a really big deal that a lot of our farmers face and have the issue with these renewable energy sources, is because of their land that they're losing. Especially when it's inherited, like when it's a family generation deal, it's kind of sad to see that land go.
Yeah, and I know a thing we see a lot here lately is people losing that inherited land and people getting out of the family farm. You know, our age range of farmers in the U.S. is growing and our number of family-owned farms is decreasing. So I definitely can see that. But I guess, how do you, you know, go about that educational aspect of it and telling people, you know, this isn't land that wasn't ever going to be used? Maybe it wasn't being used before you put wind turbines and solar panels on it, but it might be something we need in the future.
Yeah, in all honesty, I think our side of the ag industry isn't advocated well. I think we honestly fail at farmers and ranchers for advocating for ourselves, and I think we fail as advocating for our family farms, and I think that's a big thing that we need to get better at. We need to advocate, like, how long these generations have been farming this land. Like, what's the future with these family farms? Where are they going and how are they affecting the world? Because in all honesty, you may think the small family farm isn't really changing the industry and producing that much crops or food or beef, but when the world is growing as much as it can, as it is, we have to provide as much as we can, no matter who it is. And so I think that's a big thing, is we have to be better at advocating for those family farms and telling our story and kind of giving the relatability of, like, the family feeling and, like, this is what we're doing to provide for our family. It's our job. It's our lifestyle. And I think that's what we really need to focus on.
Yeah, so it really makes me question kind of your perspective on it. You know, we talk a lot about we've got to grow the food production that we have in the U.S., and we need all the land we have to produce the most amount of food to feed the most amount of people. So I guess my question, you know, just coming from what I used to know and coming from the way I used to think and the way I was raised, I question, at what point do you draw a line and say, well, you know, you're not going to have people to feed if you don't have a world that can survive. And energy is a priority, while food may be a bigger priority in the aspect of human survival. You know, a world can't function without energy. So at what point do you kind of sit down and say, well, how is this going to be allocated? Because we have to have energy. We have to have it to survive. Same way we have to have food to survive. You know, who gets what and how do you allocate that land?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing. And I think that's still something that we even struggle with, like being on my side and the farmers and ranchers side. Like, you have to find that fine line. Does everyone have the perfect idea? No. Does anyone have the perfect idea? No. Not even, like, there's not a person out there that has the exact idea that's going to work for every single community, every state, and every part of the world. And I think that's something that's got to be researched more and focused on. Like, we want our economy to be the best it possibly can. And we want every aspect, whether you're from the city or from a farm or even working in office and in a big populated area and passing these legislative laws, like, we have to all do the research and try to come together to know that we're bettering our nation. I think that's the big thing.
Yeah, and I think loss of land, it comes from a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different aspects. There's definitely a lot of different ideas around it. And land allocation's been a big topic. I know something that goes right along with our land loss and our land allocation is we've had a lot of questions posed about what do we do with disposing batteries, disposing blades, disposing all of these alternative energy sources. You know, growing up, I didn't know the lifespan of what these energy sources were. I didn't know how long they lasted or what you did with them when they broke. I guess I grew up with that idea that maybe they never really broke. We just kind of fixed them and left them up there. So kind of how does that play into the loss of land?
Yeah, it's a big thing. Like, you don't honestly think about how much space those wind turbines take up when they're on the ground. Like, you see them driving down the road, and this thing is huge. Like, this thing's really long. It's going to take up a lot of land. You don't really notice it when it's standing up and in the air. But there is, like, a lot of people call it the wind turbine graveyard. And so it's kind of like a big thing. And it's right over here in West Texas, and it's basically just a field full of broken parts from wind turbines. And you can't do anything with them. You can't really get rid of them. They just sit there. I mean, it just takes up spot that you're never going to reuse.
Yeah, I definitely think that's been a big question. And I know, like I said, you know, I kind of always thought, hey, this stuff doesn't ever break. We don't ever get rid of this stuff. This stuff's just kind of always there. We fix it and keep going. And I guess that is a terrible way of thinking about it. That's the way I kind of always was educated on it, kind of always had that idea on it that this was what was going to last for the rest of the world.
Yeah, you definitely don't think about it until you kind of just sit there and you're like, okay, so this thing breaks and it's not working. Where does it go? It sits. Like, you don't really realize it until you start getting to research everything and understanding, okay, you can't reuse these parts. You can't, they don't, like, degrade, or they just kind of sit there and take up this land.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely been interesting hearing both sides of this. And I guess it's easy to say we are all kind of walking a fine line on figuring out what we're doing with our renewable energy sources and our non-renewable energy sources and where alternative energy is going next. So I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for checking this out and enjoying us talking about our alternative energy sources. We hope that you learned a little bit and are more interested in what the fine line is that we are walking in alternative energy. If you'd like to learn more, we'd love for you to check out our story in the upcoming issue of The Agriculturist about alternative energy sources. It'll be titled All of the Above.
The Agriculturist podcast was completely produced by students enrolled in the Agricultural Communications block at Texas Tech University. The Block is a capstone experience where students enroll in 4 courses to produce the magazine and a campaign plan. To learn more about our program, go to depts.ttu.edu/agEd. The Agriculturist is available online at ttuagriculturist.com and is available on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.